All right, ladies and gentlemen, you all will listen to El Bookie. Today is Monday, October the 18th, 2021. And in today's episode of Listen to El Bookie, we're going to cover Congress investing in big pharmaceutical and tech stocks, another water crisis, and the death of Colin Powell. See you guys in a few after this short message. Peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to El Bookie. We're going to jump into our first bit of news concerning Congress and their investment habits. This is from Open Secrets. Congress invests big in big pharma and tech stocks. Congress is tasked with regulating the most powerful and influential industries in the private sector. But lawmakers could lose massive chunks of their own personal wealth if their legislation hurts those companies' bottom lines. In the most recent financial disclosures filed last year, lawmakers reported holding tens of millions of dollars in tech and pharmaceutical stocks. Congress continued to invest in these companies, even as it debated how to deal with rising drug prices and tech giants' intrusions of privacy. Lawmakers like to trade stocks. That fact became evident when Senator Richard Burr and Kelly Loeffler unloaded stock after attending a private briefing that underscored the looming danger of COVID-19. Pharmaceutical companies are among lawmakers' favorite stocks. As of the most recent financial disclosure, over 50 lawmakers reported investing upwards of six figures in the pharmaceutical and health product industry. On the campaign trail, Joe Kennedy III cast himself as a fighter who takes on Big Pharma. His disclosure shows he's profited from rising drug prices. Last year, he reported owning up to $2.1 million in pharmaceutical and health product companies in a family trust. Those industry giants such as Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Abbott Laboratories, Eli Lilly, and Pfizer. Kennedy, who is challenging Senator Ed Markey, has also come under scrutiny for owning millions in oil stocks while running on climate issues. Kennedy has said he has no control over the assets in his family trust. Pfizer is one of the most popular stocks in Congress, with 48 lawmakers placing their bet on the drug maker that hikes its prices every year. Representative Sensenbrenner, the second most senior congressman, reported holding between $1 million and $5 million in Pfizer stock. 47 lawmakers reported investing in Johnson & Johnson, despite the drug maker's role in the devastating opioid epidemic. The pharmaceutical lobby has successfully defeated bill after bill that would limit the rising price of drugs. The industry coupled record lobby spending with targeted campaign donations and direct appeal to President Donald Trump to ward off policy changes. Representative Greg Gianfanti, the wealthiest member of the House, reported investing $3.6 million in pharmaceutical companies. He was the top investor in several industry giants, including AbbVie, the Humira manufacturer that successfully killed generic competition for nearly two decades and fought off regulation from Congress. Most lawmakers disclose their assets in a wide range, but Gianfanti provided transparency by choosing to disclose the exact amount of money he invests in each asset. Gianfanti recently purchased stock in companies that might benefit from COVID-19 pandemic, including Roche Holdings, which won emergency approval from the federal government to sell an automated COVID-19 test. 79 lawmakers reported holding shares in Apple, the world's first trillion-dollar company. Apple enjoys investment from members of both parties, but Democrats are the biggest investors in the deep-pocketed iPhone market. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who represents the San Francisco district that neighbors tech giants, reported owning up to $25 million in Apple stock. Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, runs a venture capital firm that has helped make the Democratic leader one of the wealthiest members of Congress. He made a number of trades involving tech companies during the early stages of the coronavirus pandemic, including buying shares of Slack Technologies stock. Microsoft is the second most invested company. 65 lawmakers own stock in the tech giant. Representative Susan Delvain, a former Microsoft executive, owned up to $10 million in company stock. Another former Microsoft employee, Josh Gottemeier, held up to $5.2 million in Microsoft stock. Tech companies are the most popular asset for lawmakers, with 42 members invested in Google, 37 Amazon, and 34 in Facebook as of the most recent filings. Several ultra-wealthy members of Congress reported significant holdings in all five major tech companies, including Senator John Hovind, a former banker, and Representative Gil Cisneros, a lottery winner. Despite investing heavily in tech companies, Congress is making the industry a top target. House Democrats are investigating a major tech companies over antitrust issues, while the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission are running their own antitrust investigations. Congressional Democrats, including Pelosi, maintain a close relationship with companies like Google and Facebook for several years. But as the industry comes under fire over privacy and antitrust issues, influential Democrats like Senator Elizabeth Warren call for tech giants to be broken up. Other Democrats reported seven-figure investments in big tech last year. Freshman Representative Elaine Lura reported holding up to $5 million in Facebook stock, and Kim Schreier reported owning up to $6.3 million in stock for far more than any other investor. Okay, that's the end of that. I'm going to come back and make a short commentary, and we're going to move on to our next bit of news. See you guys in a minute. Peace. Hi guys, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. I'm going to make a few comments about the issue with Congress and their investments in big pharma and tech stocks. Okay. It seems to me that here there's a built-in conflict of interest. I mean, either way you slice it, you have members of Congress that are sent to Congress every so often, every two years, by their constituents that are affected by their investments. It's how can you regulate an industry that is paying you? You know, tech, they have lobbies. I went over the part about lobbies, and what lobbyists do is there's lobbyists for big tech companies and the big tech industry, and there's lobbyists for pharmaceutical companies. They have deep pockets, and they pay congressmen to vote in their favor. So if you have constituents that send these people to Congress that are affected by the decisions they make, it's just bad. Because say for instance, you send somebody to Congress because your concern is the rising prices of drugs, the rising prices of drugs, all kinds of pharmaceuticals. And when they get there, they take money from the lobby, you know, which basically just pays them to vote their way. So it's a contradiction. Not only is it's a bad conflict of interest. Because on the other hand, you telling your constituents one thing, that you're going to work in their favor to reduce drug prices, but then on the other end, you invested in the companies, and you don't make money unless they keep their prices constantly going up. So this is bad. Regardless of how they say that they're beginning to attack these companies for antitrust and privacy violations, how hard are they going to go in the paint with these companies? Of course, they'll put up a good front and say that they're working hard to try to break these companies up or whatever, but it doesn't profit them by regulating these companies, because they're in bed with them in two ways. They're buying stock in the company, and then you have the industry lobbyists paying them. So how can their constituents win when there's a double conflict of interest? It's bad. It's something that has to be addressed, because otherwise, why are we sending them to Congress when they're supposed to be working for us, but when in all actuality, they work for the lobby. They work for the big pharma lobby, and they work for the tech industry lobby. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy how money and politics, you know, creates strange bedfellows, and then the public at large that put their trust in these politicians to go to Congress and the Senate to work for them are disenfranchised. Well, that's all I have to say about that. When we come back, I'm going to go over another Michigan water crisis. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to jump right into our next bit of news concerning another water crisis in Michigan. And this one is: Michigan governor orders urgent response to lead crisis in Benton Harbor, Michigan. From the Associated Press, Governor Gretchen Whitmer on Thursday ordered a whole of government response to elevated levels of lead in tap water in the southwestern Michigan city of Benton Harbor, and vowed to accelerate the replacement of its lead pipes. Her directive that state agencies ensure Benton Harbor residents have safe tap water came about a week after her administration, amid criticism of state and local officials' handling of the response, urged people to use only bottled water for cooking and drinking. The Democratic governor on Thursday also committed to replacing lead pipes within 18 months, accelerating what had been a 5-year timeline announced more than 3 months ago. The whole of government response will proceed with the urgency and haste this threat demands, Whitmer wrote in the order, which mandates that residents receive free or low-cost lead-related services, including health care. Benton Harbor, a predominantly Black and mostly low-income community of 9,700, is in Berrien County, 100 miles from Chicago. For 3 years, measurements have detected lead levels well above 15 parts per billion, the federal threshold for taking action. Following the Flint water crisis, Michigan put in place the nation's strongest lead in water regulations, but advocacy groups, including the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, recently urged the Biden administration to help, alleging the city and state actions, including corrosion control measures, had been poorly implemented and ineffective. This is what we've been waiting for, an all-hands-on-deck approach to fix the lead contamination crisis in Benton Harbor, the Reverend Edward Pinckney, president of the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, said in a written statement. Lead is considered harmful at any level, and children are particularly vulnerable because it can slow growth and result in learning and behavior problems. Top state officials, including Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist II and Health Director Elizabeth Hortel, were in Benton Harbor Thursday to announce the response plan alongside Major Marcus Muhammad and Black church leaders. Republicans criticized the governor for not attending the news conference and accused her of waiting too long to act. Whitmer and her administration in action and in addressing this issue is yet another failed promise to add to the growing list for this one's with catastrophic implications for the residents of Benton Harbor, said Gustav Portla, spokesman for the state GOP. Whitmer directive says residents must continue to have access to free bottled water immediately. State officials must provide residents with clear, up-to-date information about the harmful effects of lead exposure, the replacement of lead service lines, and lead data results. Households with children or pregnant women who are eligible for Medicare can receive a free investigation of an abatement of lead hazards within the home. Abatement of lead hazards in the home. Whitmer's predecessor, Republican Rick Snyder, faces criminal charges over the Flint crisis, where managers have appointed switches to the water source to save money, and the city followed state regulations, bad advice not to apply anti-corrosion treatment. That's that. Be back shortly with a short commentary on this issue of another water crisis. Man, this is crazy. Okay, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. It's very funny. I don't think it's a coincidence, but this is another predominantly Black area with water issues. I mean, it seemed like they would have learned from the first Flint, Michigan, what happened in Flint, Michigan, when they were just trying to skate by and get out cheap because, you know, it was affecting Black residents, you know. So it looks like the same thing is going on in Benton Harbor, but this governor is trying, from what I just read, is trying to not end up like her predecessor with charges on her. So she's moving with all deliberate speed to try to get this issue taken care of. So you gotta, I wouldn't say you have to applaud, but, you know, I think this type of thing could have been addressed years ago. I guess they had to know that these two areas had issues with their water, but they didn't do anything. Probably because of the race and economic status of the individuals that lives in these areas. Okay, once we return from this short break, we're going to give some information about the death of Colin Powell. See you shortly. Hi everyone, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to cover our third piece of news and final for this episode, and it's concerning the death of Colin Powell. Colin Powell, first Black U.S. Secretary of State, dies of COVID-19 complications amid cancer battle. This is from CNN. Colin Powell, the first Black U.S. Secretary of State whose leadership in several Republican administrations helped shape American foreign policy in the last years of the 20th century and in the early years of the 21st, has died from complications from COVID-19 his family said on Facebook. He was 84. General Colin L. Powell, former U.S. Secretary of State and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, passed away this morning due to complications from COVID-19. The Powell family wrote on Facebook, noting he was fully vaccinated. Powell had multiple melanoma, a cancer of plasma cells that suppress the body's immune system, as well as Parkinson's. Peggy Safrano, Powell's longtime chief of staff, confirmed to CNN. Even if fully vaccinated against COVID-19, those who are immune compromised are at greater risk for the virus. We have lost a remarkable and loving husband, father, grandfather, and great American, the family said. Powell was a distinguished and trailblazing professional soldier whose career took him from combat duty in Vietnam to becoming the first Black national security advisor during the end of Ronald Reagan's presidency, and the youngest and first African-American chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President George Herbert Walker Bush. His national popularity soared in the aftermath of the U.S.-led coalition victory during the Gulf War, and for a time in the mid-90s, he was considered a leading contender to become the first Black president of the United States. But his reputation would be forever stained when George W. Bush's first Secretary of State, he pushed faulty intelligence before the United Nations to advocate for the Iraq War, which he would later call a blot on his record. Bush said in a statement Monday that Powell was a great public servant who was such a favorite of presidents that he earned the Presidential Medal of Freedom twice. He was highly respected at home and abroad, and most important, Colin was a family man and a friend. Though Powell never mounted a White House bid, when he was sworn in as Bush's Secretary of State in 2001, he became the highest-ranking Black public official to date in the country, standing fourth in the presidential line of succession. I think it shows to the world what is possible in this country, Powell said of his history-making nomination during his Senate confirmation hearing. It shows to the world that, follow our motto, and over a period of time from our beginning, if you believe in the values that espouse, you can see things as miraculous as me sitting before you to receive your approval. The point, the Colin Powell Republican no longer exists in the Republican Party. Later in his life, Powell would grow disillusioned with the Republican Party, right would launch, and would use his political capital to help elect Democrats to the White House, most notably Barack Obama, the first Black president whom Powell endorsed in the final weeks of the 2008 campaign. The announcement was seen as a significant boost for Obama's candidacy due to Powell's widespread popularity, appeal, and stature as one of the most prominent and successful Black Americans in public life. Powell is survived by his wife, Alma Vivian Johnson Powell, whom he married in 1962, as well as three children. Okay, this is the end of our episode for Monday, October the 18th, 2021. I'll see you again soon. And like I always say, y'all be good to each other. Love each other. I'll holler at y'all on the next episode. This is L Boogie. I'm out. I'll holler at y'all later. Peace.